Welcome to another episode of Why Not You with your host, Derek Wells, where we talk with leaders and entrepreneurs who are doing what they love to do. They'll share insights into overcoming adversity, the systems they use, along with the power of personal growth, faith, and much more. Our goal is to empower you with personal growth, faith, and a plan for ultimate success. Now, here's Derek with another life-changing story.
Welcome to another episode of Why Not You. I am your host, D. Wells. This is a podcast where we transform hesitation into empowerment. In this episode, I am joined by Hannah Pruzanski, who bravely traded the chase for wealth for a life rich in simplicity and satisfaction. We learned that the heart's compass and a supportive tribe are essential for success. We journeyed from the fast lanes of finance to the lush serenity of Costa Rica, where Hannah is brewing a new venture with local flavors and a spirit of community. Yeah. Together, we unearthed the courage to redefine success, to prioritize well-being over wealth, and to embrace the beauty in life's open boca. Join us in her stories that will inspire the entrepreneur in you. So connect and let's pour into your journey at where, Hannah?
A boca abierta.
Dare and drive, thrive. Why not you?
Have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow know what you truly want to become.
I like that. Yeah, I think that truly, there's one thing of people saying like, oh, truly follow your dreams or follow your intuition.
Yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of like that other quote, which is one that I think has stayed like most true as a common thread in my life, which is how you do anything is how you do everything.
Right.
So I used to think like, oh, like all in those little micro moments, they don't really matter because the big things really matter. Yeah. But those really small decisions, like the decision to, you know, even though you're in a bad mood and you force yourself to like not go on social media and like go outside for 5 minutes. Or even those small little things, just kind of like negative spirals happen, like positive snowballs can happen.
Yeah.
But I think that's really true in following your intuition to make it stronger. But that's the catch 22, right? Because when you're so far gone from not feeling in your intuition, it can be really hard to change that course.
It can be, right?
Yeah. Because a lot of times I'm like, is this, especially being a woman, like a female, we do have really strong intuition, I think, like that gut feeling. But if you have anxiety as well, sometimes it's hard to know if it's anxiety or an intuition.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's pretty deep right there, right? No, for real. You think about it, like, is it intuition or is it some kind of anxiety, some kind of fear, or you just not, you don't have like that calm presence? Because whatever it is like going on the inside, it's like it has you just kind of, you know, like your senses are heightened.
Totally. And I actually think I used to struggle with that. Mm. And I can't remember who it was, but there was someone saw it on Instagram. So of course it's legit, but she actually said something like that your intuition like won't be fear-based. Like anxiety is super fear-based. So if you're like, oh, is that like excitement for like, I don't know, like for some weird reason you think you should do that, but it's not super rooted in fear.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of one of the determining factors.
See. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is Zatsky. We just got this party started with like a formal introduction. But listen, she's an expat from California, now living in Costa Rica. I was like, how did this all come about? That's what I want to know, first of all.
I feel like a lot of people did some things post-pandemic. I don't know if that has something to do with it. Who knows? Everyone's journey is their own. But I actually think the pandemic gave me some more time to be more introspective and think about what I wanted to do. And that act of slowing down really helped me come to some heavy interactions with myself and figure some things out. And I would never imagine that I would be living here like 2 years ago, but one thing led to another and kind of like following your intuition.
Right.
Yeah, it led me to being here, which I never would have predicted for myself.
And now you're, and your background was in finance too, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I mean, was that one of those jobs that actually allowed you to work from home where you can actually move to Costa Rica?
No.
No.
Quite the opposite. It was really hard too, because after the I got my MBA like a couple years ago, and then I was doing consulting for companies, whether it was like a startup, there it was anyone trying to raise equity, anyone trying to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
So I helped do business plans and so write out like the whole long business plan that would support a pitch deck asking for that capital. So the pitch deck was really simple, high level, just like what the company is, their value proposition, why they want to raise money, how they're going to put it all together, what their team's like, what the return's like, you know, the pro forma, the valuations on it. And then the business plan. So that was only, you know, a couple slides, whatever, not super hefty. And then the business plan is like, could be, you know, over 100 pages of all the super nitty gritty details on everything and how it's going to be carried out and, you know, sources to support the, all the data points and blah, blah, blah. So I helped with the pitch decks and the business plans. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, one day I'm going to start my own company. And I was trying to be a part of other people's companies. And then during the pandemic, when consulting went away, I started getting more involved with my own finances. Uh-huh. And I was like, why aren't women in investing? And like, why are all these concepts seem pretty simple, but they all have this like crazy business jargon around it? Like, so then I got super obsessed with investing. And I like thought that impact investing was the way to go, and getting women investing more will close the generational, you know, gap, especially, you know, with men and women. So I got into it, but I ended up started working not, I would not call them the enemy, but like they really do just invest in these big, you know, in these big diversified portfolios that aren't necessarily supporting good things. And then, you know, so I was okay, well, I'll go in there and I'll get my Series 7. I'll get like all the knowledge I can. And then I could go do more of the impact investing that I want. But somehow along that journey, I moved to Costa Rica, decided that maybe I'd want to do not do investing. Like maybe that's not the whole ticket out of there. I almost feel like I got like jaded and upset.
Did you?
And really? Thought maybe a position and what I wanted to do there wouldn't actually be what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, here I am. And now I'm starting something completely different, not in the world of finance, but I finally, for the first time, now that I'm 33 years old, started, you know, my own company. I wouldn't call it a company, it's a very small business.
Now, do you think? Because I want to get into that, like just you starting a business. But do you think if what you were doing
also, prior to- I don't know if you like air this on YouTube or anything, but this is not beer. This is just a kombucha. I don't want anyone be like, oh my gosh, she's drinking beer at 10 a.m.
Well, actually, it's 12 a.m. where you are, right? Are you, you're in Costa Rica?
Yeah, it is. So it would be appropriate. It's 12:15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're good to go.
Culturally here, it'd be totally fine.
Yeah. Well, you just think about how many people actually go to like wineries or whatever, like first thing in the morning, they drinking mimosas.
Yeah, but we're not out of winery. This is a work day.
That's right. So do you think like prior to you actually, you know, just stretching out, going, you know, starting your own business, had you been like completely content or happy doing what you were doing, do you think you would have remained there? Or was it? You just didn't have that love and passion.
That's a really good question. I think I needed to have more autonomy in my work. I feel like, you know, I up until now was the support for a wealth advisor who's like highly successful on the West Coast. And he is awesome. Great boss, great everything. But still, there's just still certain limits in what I could do. And I felt like even if I had, you know, a big project like I wanted to do, like, hey, I want to like go create this, you know, pitch deck for women in tech. And then we can like go and give these presentations and really help like this segment. A lot of it was like, yeah. Let's just focus on the other stuff though. You know? Yeah. So I just think, also like the world of finance, it's really intense. There's a lot of different personalities, just like everything. Right. So I don't know, to answer your question, like, I don't know if I had more autonomy or more creativity in a space where I could like do more creative outreach or go and like kind of study in a one section that I wanted to do. If I had that more, maybe I'd be more motivated to stay in my industry.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, just having that autonomy and wanting to try new things and like build the business in one way or another and then track it and then reevaluate and then do something else. It just felt a little too stagnant.
Got it.
A little too boring, I guess. Uh-huh. Not moving quick enough.
Yeah.
So like I said, I've always wanted to start my own thing. And my boyfriend, who's Costa Rican, we're talking about like, there's like a lot of opportunity, especially where we live. Uh-huh. And here in Costa Rica, and then this starting our own thing kind of like hits on a lot of things that excite me.
Yeah.
However, with that comes so much fear of overcoming a lot of things.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And I think it was really humbling too, because I helped a lot of other companies get started or do a lot of pitch decks and business plans for the startup phase. And I'm like, oh, it'd be so easy. I just got to think of that one idea. And then I thought of like, to me, what seemed like the perfect idea. And then I like, couldn't, there's so many blocks when it's your own thing.
Yeah.
Just on like an ego level, a fear level. I mean, it's just a whole different ball game. So it's been a wildly humbling experience. Even though I'm not trying to like change the world and do this like crazy international business. It's just something very local,
right,
and fun, you know, and like the tourism space. But it's come with like a lot of challenges and a lot of me having to have some checks and balances with myself.
Mm-hmm. So because you just think about your background and what you've been able to do. Do you ever feel like, man, if I could do it for somebody else, why can't I do it for myself?
Okay, 100%. I like got my Series 7 in the finance world, which is like kind of a big deal. And I like, you know, was working for these wealth advisors. I mean, I know exactly how much they make, you know, I know exactly how much they're bringing in the business. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, you guys are running what? And then the clients that we have who make even more money.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, I think it really made me think about wealth in a different way, but in a really good way. Also another, you didn't ask this, but I'm going to say it anyways. Another like thing that was so shocking to me is because we see people, we do like tax strategy for people with a lot of money, you know, and how we can help them plan in the future and think through all their options. But, you know, we really get involved with, you know, how much money they have, if they have any more money coming in from like, you know, an inheritance, or if they have to be financially responsible for anyone else in their family, or, you know, so we get so much info of exactly where all their dollars are and where they came from, because that is totally part of the job of how we can help them organize and what they can do. But the people who I thought were really wealthier, had all this wealth, you know, are maybe like third generation. Now money is running out. They never actually needed to really work because they had family support,
right,
or vice versa. You know, people who I thought like, oh, everything was just kind of handed to them. And then you see like, oh, they're actually supporting six other people in their family. They've totally self-made, you know? So I it really put me in a like, do not assume, you know, anything about anyone ever, especially when it comes to money. Like I thought, rich people always acted one way. Mm-hmm. People without money acted another, but every journey is so different and people's relationship with money is so different.
Right.
And then just tying that to self-worth and then what you can achieve. I mean, I don't want to sound too hippie, but like the mental blocks that you put on yourself, really, I mean, just of what you expect or what you can even think is possible. Yeah. My whole world like that got shaken up, but I think in a really good way. From my experience. So I think it gave me a lot of confidence to do something and that I didn't have to do anything really big, you know, like I could actually do something small and fun.
You know, it's crazy that what you just said right there, as far as like the mental blocks, I was just watching a video of, is it Brian Moran? I think that's his name, the one who wrote the book called The 12-Week Year. And he talked about impossible. And then he said, if I could show you, or if I could tell you, like, you can make this much money in, let's say, a month, like, just double what your income is in a month, it'll seem impossible to you. And the first thing you'll probably ask is how. And then he said, basically, it's because you really don't know. So what we're going to do right now is stretch your thinking and show you some new things that you probably never considered or thought of before. And it's just going to blow you away. But then next thing you know, once you apply this information, you'll be able to achieve whatever it is. And so when you just said it, just made me think of that. I was like,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think you're so right. I mean, that's true. And it's so funny. I think, I don't know if I'm programmed to like be really skeptical of like, oh, if I could tell you could double your income, you know, in however long, I don't know. All I can think of overwhelmingly is like Instagram, mm-hmm. you know, of all the like, sign up for my 12-week course and we can da 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 da. And yeah. there's so much, everyone thinks they're an expert now. You know, being down in Costa Rica, there's like a lot of 25-year-old life coaches. And it's just
that is hilarious.
I don't know. It's just hard, you know, because I think there's so much truth to that, right? Mm-hmm. Of like thinking of like the possibilities of, you know, what you can do. Because if you don't think it's possible, you really can't get there. That's so legit. But then also the like blindly going in without being like, we all want to say how. You know, right. So I think that there's a lot of validity in that. But then also, I think a lot of people read books like that and then they like catch you on that and then make you sign up for a 12-week course.
Yeah.
As there a 25-year-old life coach.
So when you actually moved to Costa Rica, or did you actually like, how many times did you visit Costa Rica before you actually moved there? That's one thing I want. Okay. Or did you just you're like, you know, this is the place I'm going?
So I'm 33 years old now, but I think starting when I was like, I want to say maybe like 6 or 7, my parents, every Christmas, you know, we do like a 2-week family vacation. And we started going to Costa Rica. And so we went every year for, I don't know, maybe 6 years. And we'd go up in the north towards Tamarindo. Uh-huh. And it started getting like pretty built up. So then we like kind of were like, all right, we had it really good for a while it lasted, but you know, now it's kind of too resorty and too crowded and not really like why we fell in love with it.
Yeah.
So we stopped going. And then again, when I was like 24 or 25, we went back, but we went to Nosara, which is a little bit farther south. Mm-hmm. And it was still like pretty cool. We liked it, but it was still pretty built up and not really the Costa Rica that we like could remember and love.
Yeah.
So yeah, then we never came back. And then it wasn't until like 6 years after that, when I met my boyfriend, my Costa Rican boyfriend in California. He was in California at the time. And then after we were dating for a few months, he was like, come check out Costa Rica. And I was like, fine, but I'm only going to come for 2 weeks. Like I have work. I can't like, you know, just pick up my whole life and move there, you know?
Right.
But I stayed for 3 months, lied to my work about where I was, went back to California for like another 6 months with him. And then the whole time we were in California, we were just planning of how we could try and move back to Costa Rica. And he's from a place that's, you know, not like super well known, like not a ton of people, kind of like where I met you, like the, not a lot of people come to like Bejuco or Jaco or, you know, and we're a little bit outside of Jaco. And so, you know, you still get empty beaches, like a lot of communities, families here. So,
right.
Yeah. And my whole dream was to move to Maui, but Costa Rica to me is like a more organic, cheaper version of Maui. Or like what I could afford for like a bathtub in Maui, I could like buy a home here.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's a lot more accessible to someone who's like not a millionaire.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is. Because it's while we were there, and yeah, I mean, you met my daughter. I took her I took her to a place. Actually, it's right. Well, it was right next to us. Was it Estorillos? How you say it?
Oh, Estorillos.
Yeah, Estorillos. And so Estorillos Estates. And so there was like a house that I looked at back in 2018. And it was probably a good 50 to 60 yards from the water. But it was off one of the side streets. And it was less than 300. I think it might have been like 250 or something like that. But at the time I looked at it, two-story house, probably like on, I don't know, maybe a third, maybe just over a third of an acre. But I mean, the stuff that they have out there is nice.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Yeah.
It's just a level of peace. I haven't felt like that in a long time. It was just
you really should have bought that house.
That's what my daughter said too.
You really blew it, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's still like a lot of little gems here, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There it is. We're gonna make it happen one day.
Yes. So I'm in favor, obviously.
Yeah. I know you are. Already passed your real estate agent and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I just spent Christmas with her yesterday.
Did you?
Two days ago? What's the date today? Yeah, on the 25th.
Oh, nice. So I know you talked about the business that you're starting. You're starting this new venture, and it's going to be coffee related. I mean, how are you feeling about it? Are you excited? You nervous?
Oh my God, all the things. It was like way more work to get everything going than we thought. Because the whole idea was, okay, so this is where the idea came from.
Okay.
So my sister went to Sayulita, Mexico for a work trip with her husband. And Sayulita is like a really cute little beach town in Mexico. And my sister said, it was a little bit touristy and built up, didn't like love Sayulita. But the highlight was this guy who has this company called Taste of Sayulita. And he's like, I think he is a Mexican, maybe Mexican-American guy, has, a gringa girlfriend who moved down to Sayulita. And the two of them do these tequila tastings. And they bring all the tequila to your house. And they like teach you about the different tequila and pair it with like, a couple different things. And my sister said, this is so fun. It was just like such a fun way to like be more connected with the place and the people. And as fun as the tequila tasting was, like, yeah, we learned some stuff about tequila, which was fun, but it was just so fun having them host it and like creating that space for all of us. And you're still supporting all, the local people. They have like local organic food and stuff from the community. So I was like, oh my God, we should so do that in Costa Rica. So originally I wanted to call it Taste of Jaco, but that already exists. It's a walking food tour, so I couldn't do that. And I also wanted to have a Spanish name for my business. Even though tourists come here and it's geared towards tourists, like we're in Costa Rica, the language is Spanish. Like, let's get a fun Spanish name in here. So so now the business is called Boca Abierta, which literally means open mouth, which is kind of funny and fun. But really, people say you have like a boca abierta, if like you start to like drink a lot and you start kind of talking too much, you start saying a lot. So it's kind of a place to, create a fun environment, man. Maybe, get a little buzz, you start sharing stories.
Yeah.
So we have the local Costa Rican is called Waro. It's a distilled sugar cane. And the government actually weirdly has a monopoly over the whole distilling here in Costa Rica. So then in response to that, there's been artisanal kind of underground, but very legitimate moonshine, for lack of a better word, made. But it's delicious and, generationally proven to, not make you blind or anything.
Okay.
And then there's also like other artisanal distilling, but they all are artisanal spirits made from like very local fruits here, like cass, that a lot of people don't know about. And so, we feature, we kind of talk about the history of Costa Rica. You get to try a lot of really delicious drinks. You kind of get to know culturally and economically the importance of Waro in Costa Rica. So then once we started going with that idea of doing this Waro tasting, my boyfriend runs a surf school and he was saying, oh man, so many people ask me where they can do a coffee tasting. And I was like, what? You and me love coffee. We should learn about coffee and do it. And he was like, okay, well, let's talk about our favorite coffees. And so, you know, we like naturally drink our favorite coffees here in Costa Rica. Huh? We went up to San Jose because the only coffee tours you can do are like by the city. And it takes hours and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so amazing, but I mean, it's a whole day or 2 day commitment.
Right.
So we went and became these like coffee, not experts, but we definitely learned a lot more than what we knew originally.
So are you guys like the 25 year old life coaches?
Yeah, we're like 25 year old life coaches claiming we're experts. Oh, went to six farms. Now we know everything. No, so we learned a little bit about the coffee. We do, we prepare the coffee chorealo, which is like, I mean, it's really means just like a pour over. And it's like these big, beautiful wooden structures that Costa Ricans use. And so we prepare the coffee like that. We do tasting notes. We actually talk about, you know, the bigger farms, the most gourmet coffee drink locally, you know, the most widely drink coffee in Costa Rica, kind of. Okay. We actually even talk about Starbucks. They have a really interesting foothold in Costa Rica. But yeah, so then we made this coffee experience and then the most nerve-wracking part. So we like created our script. We figured out how we wanted to fit this into 90 minutes, give you some info, but really just make it more of a fun, yeah, interactive experience. And the hardest part was doing our very first tasting for our friends and asking for feedback.
Serious?
I mean, I've never seen my boyfriend so nervous before. Yeah. Just like, it was so funny. I don't know. I think just like having your own business, putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was one of my friends doing it for me, I'd be so excited for them and, you know, whatever. So chill. But for us doing it, I mean, I was like choking on my words. I was like so nervous.
But it's a good practice though, right?
Really good practice. Yeah. So we took some photos, did the practice, yeah, got the nerves out. And now like, once we did that, we're like, let's go. Like, let's start booking stuff. We felt so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like putting our whole idea that we thought about for like, you know, months into reality. It was like pretty exciting.
So what kind of feedback did you guys get?
The feedback that we got more feedback on the coffee tasting than the Waro one. The Waro one was more like simple and clean and I don't know. It was great.
Yeah.
The feedback that we got for the Waro one, though, we did give like a couple spicy drinks. And our friends were like, hey, like, remember people from the US, like some of them don't like spicy, like you would kill them. We're like, yeah. Oh, great point. We didn't even like think to tell them like a chili Waro is really spicy. Uh-huh. And the feedback that we got for the coffee one, I think we were trying to do too much with the coffee. We're doing like a professional coffee cupping for every single coffee. I don't know if you've done that before, but you like weigh out the coffee grounds that are freshly ground. And then you do it in a specific amount of water at a very specific temperature. And then you wait like how many minutes, like 7 minutes or 6 minutes or something. Yeah. And then you break the top and then you slurp it. And it's like a whole thing. And they're like, yeah, that was cool. But like, we don't want to do that. We just kind of want to taste the coffee.
They just
want to
taste it.
Maybe do one cupping. And I'm like, oh, thank God, because that was just taking a long time and was really stressful. So I was really happy we kind of got rid of cupping for all of them.
Yeah.
So it's just more chill, but then you kind of get that technicality cupping at the end. So,
Because I was thinking about that, I mean, there's so many different coffee like farms out there. I mean, how do you choose like which ones that you want to highlight, or is it going to be like seasonal?
So you know what? We're open to having it be seasonal, but right now how it's set up is we wanted a variety to showcase really true Costa Rican coffee. So you get a nice wide variety. So oddly enough, the very first coffee we start with is actually from Starbucks.
Okay.
But it's all beans from Costa Rica. So Starbucks doesn't own coffee. Starbucks is a coffee bar. They don't own any farms. They buy from 38 countries of like the 80 that produce coffee. But Starbucks only owns one farm in the entire world, and it's in Costa Rica.
Wow.
Because the bean that Starbucks thinks is the absolute best is called Arabica. Mm-hmm. And Costa Rica only grows Arabica. Like Costa Rica is like really, you know, there's like 2 or 3% of all the biodiversity in the world is in Costa Rica. Uh-huh. I mean, Costa Rica's natural environment is insane and so amazing for growing. I mean, so they only have that one farm to grow the very best strains to create new strains of Arabica. And like, it's just R&D. So it's how to, you know, do some research and development of how to create natural resistance against diseases that kind of affect all their farms globally for Arabica bean.
Yeah.
So we start with Starbucks Plus. That's like a way that people can have a good baseline to compare the other coffees because most people have tried Starbucks.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of interesting that even Starbucks has identified Costa Rica as the best growing place in the whole world for the best bean in the whole world. And then we moved to only Costa Rica brands, you know, because like we want things to be Costa Rican to the core. We feature Costa Rica's most gourmet coffee, you know, before like the 80s, you couldn't find a good cup of coffee in Costa Rica because they're exporting all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So this Costa Rican family was like, no, like we need to save some of the good stuff for our people. So we showcase, you know, Costa Rica's most gourmet coffee. And then there's just coffee like for the people, you know, like it's the most cost effective. It's all Costa Rican coffee. It's the most widely drank daily in Costa Rica. We feature that one. So you could do all those tasting notes. And then there's these brothers from Jaco who went to school with Alex and they have an awesome coffee shop. They do all their hand like hand roasting, you know, in a really small roaster.
Oh, wow.
Right in Jaco. And they drive and they pick like, you know, the beans that they want. They have like a relationship with like this really, you know, small farm and like the best growing region that they love. So we kind of bring it really wide and bring it really local.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's going to be exciting.
So that's how we chose. We, you know, and we drink a lot of coffee and had a lot of hyped up conversations, you know, after our coffee. Of what we should include. So it was a really fun process.
That's good.
Yeah.
I just thought about it. I was like, man, there's so many coffee farmers out there. I just remember on our way there, we actually sat next to a guy that actually owned a coffee farm. And so that's why he was actually coming out. I didn't get the name of his coffee farm, but he was like, yeah, I have to manage these people. So it's time for me to come out and take care of the farm. Yeah.
Wow.
The trip.
That's really interesting. Yeah, a lot of people, the coffee is a big thing here. It's hard to get a bad cup here, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And I like what you the way that they actually make the coffee, like what you described as far as like the wood stand, and then they have like the little sack and you put the grounds in there, then you pour
Yeah, it's so fun. And then a really cool, you know, we wanted everything to involve the community as much as possible. Mm. Like I'm the only foreign thing. Me and Starbucks are the only foreign parts of the business. but the choreador, that wood thing, is we got hand carved ones that we bought from our friend's grandpa, who grew up on a cafetal, like a little plantation, coffee plantation. Up in the north in Naranjo, and he's 98 years old and he still hand carves these choreadores with his hands. So we like bought them from him, you know, which is so fun. And we already had someone ask about, you know, where they could buy one, so now we're always keeping like at least two in our car just in case anyone asks, you know, what's a way
that's
to
what
like...
I was just thinking, like, wouldn't it be cool to actually partner up with some of the locals that are actually creating or making these stands and then selling.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Everything's like handmade from like someone knows. Yeah. Even down to like the coconut milk we give, it's made by hand. Yeah.
See. That's going to be a fun venture right there.
So fun. So fun.
So as you're just kind of moving along, you and your boyfriend, his name is Alex, right?
Yeah, Alex.
Okay. Like, I know just like how important it is just with planning and just, I mean, there's just so much to think about and like overcome because you want it to be right. But I know that there's really no, I think sometimes people just kind of wait for the perfect time to actually start and implement things. Have you ever, like, have you guys kind of, did you guys ever go through that phase of like, oh, it's not time, or we got to wait for the perfect time? Or did you guys just execute and just start making things happen?
So really similar in a lot of ways, but timing wise, I couldn't be more from the US and he couldn't be more from Costa Rica. Like, I'm like, there's never going to be a right time. We got to do it yesterday. And he's like, hey, why don't you relax a little bit? You shouldn't rush anything. And I'm like, but then we're not doing anything, you know? Right. So it was like, that part was really good. Like, just in summary, working with him has been so, I mean, I feel like it could have like brought us closer or broken us up, but I think it actually brought us closer. And it was really actually fun, like figuring out like, you know, how to communicate with him in a different way. And yeah, now I feel like I've slowed down to the point of discomfort for me, but it's been really good because we slow down and do things more correctly. Like, he's one like, no, let's read that again. Like, no, let's think about this one more second. Like, actually think, like, do you have to get this done today? Like, why? And then there's been times where I push back on him where I was like, even though we don't have this one thing for the photo shoot, high season is right now. And I think it's more important to get photos up, even if we're missing this one thing, than not. And he is like, oh, okay, that actually makes sense. Fine, we'll do it.
Yeah.
So I think it's really good because we keep each other, I think, in like a really good check. But there's definitely no right time. But then like people told me this. It's just so annoying that you hear people like, for me, I just like heard people tell me the same thing about going and starting your business. Mm. Like, oh yeah, once you start, you're going to wish that you like had started it a year before. Like, well, that's not reasonable. I have to save my money and da da da.
Yeah.
And now that I started, I'm like, oh, I should have started this a year ago. But you know, who's to say like what timing is right or wrong, you know? So whatever, I don't stress about that too much. I'm like, whatever, we're starting now. And now's the right time.
Exactly. And I was going to ask, like, when did your sister tell you about this experience? She
told me about this a year ago.
A year.
Yeah, when I should have started.
Hey, thank you for joining me in this episode of Why Not You. Just want to thank Hannah for this episode. But listen, this is just part one. Part two is coming up. But in the meantime, I have a couple questions that I want to ask. One, how do you think one can actually differentiate between intuition and anxiety, particularly in a high pressure decision-making situation when it comes to, do I take action on following through on my ideas and dreams, or do I stay complacent where I'm comfortable, where I know? Second, in what ways can the fear of judgment to do things on your own, regardless of what other people think, is worth taking action for your success and making that major step, whether it's in entrepreneurship or doing something that you're truly passionate about. All right, you all. You all have a blessed week. And remember, we cannot become what we need if we remain where we are. Stay tuned for part two. God bless.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Why Not You. Remember, have faith and believe in yourself. God does. Also, subscribe to our channel and go to our website for more free content and life-changing stories at thewhynotyou.com. Until next time.